Hello, I'm Derek Marinos. This is number 0640, the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder, and it comes to you right now.
The following program is brought to you in living color.
Now, it's time for an eclectic mix of interviews and some of the oddest news stories you'll ever hear. It's the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder.
Hey there, hi there, ho there! Peter Anthony Holder here with you, and yes, this is indeed another edition of the Stuff File program, number 0640. And coming up on this edition of the Stuff File program, my favorite novelist, Peter James, is back with his 17th Detective Superintendent Roy Grace novel. This one is called Left You Dead. The genesis for this story comes from Peter's vivid imagination of what would happen if he took his wife out to run errands while he sat in the car, but she just disappeared.
I've often thought, what would I do if I stopped outside a store and Lara, my wife, rushed inside to get something simple like, say, a sack of cat litter, and then never came out again? How long would I sit in the car waiting? When I get out the car and I walk in the store and she's not there, what would I then do? How long do I wait before I start calling around friends and family and then the police? If she had genuinely vanished, how long would it be before the police started to suspect that I'd maybe murdered her?
Merlin Batchelor has a unique side business in Norwich, England. He bought a used armored personnel carrier that he now uses and calls it a tank taxi. It all started when he got a license to drive a tank.
I did my driving license for tanks about 15 years ago, just for fun. Never had a house with a big enough driveway to park one on till now. I got it really for family. I went through a phase of collecting the driving licenses. You know, after you pass your car license and you think, oh wow, I can drive now, that's cool. And then I went and did a motorbike one. I thought, oh, now I can drive motorbikes. I went and did a lorry one. I thought, I might as well collect all of these. And I realized there were some esoteric categories. And you can do a license to drive electric milk floats in the UK and things like that. Well, license for steamrollers as well. That was an interesting one, driving a steamroller. So I did the tank one. I thought, this is pretty cool.
Stuart Nolman is back with another edition of Book Banter.
Hi, I'm Stuart Nolman, and Book Banter is going to get back with the Beatles, that is, and their companion book to their three-part docuseries called Get Back. So dress up warmly. The rooftop concert begins shortly on the Stuff File program.
And there's lots and lots of Stuff File news and, of course, an idiot of the day. The guest Slater, the person who told you this was show number 0640, was Derek Marinos, who is a journalist for radio and television at CBC Montreal. Thank you very much, Derek, for doing the guest Slater on this edition of the Stuff File program, a show that is listener-supported, fan-funded radio that depends on you for our success. Join us at patreon.com to help make this show an even bigger and better radio experience. Well, let's get right to the stuff, shall we? It just so happens that in this first segment, all of our stories have something to do with fast food outlets, and this first one just screams Canada. Here in Quebec, the Granby Zoo announced that a pink flamingo had escaped, but it was quickly found. Any guesses where? It was loitering in the parking lot of a Tim Hortons. The flamingo flew the coop and was spotted by customers in the parking lot. No word on whether it was getting Timbits or just a double-double. Said Carl Fournier, director of animal care at Granby Zoo, for reasons unknown, the flamingo escaped and flew away from its group. Our team quickly mobilized and it was captured in a calm manner. The flamingo is back at the zoo and doing well, but it was captured before it could roll up the rim. Police arrested 31-year-old Amanda Nicole Martinez. She's accused of throwing soup in the face of a restaurant employee on November the 7th. Martinez is charged with assault causing bodily injury, said Deputy Police Chief Alan Teston. We do not condone this type of behavior and hold our citizens to the highest standard. If a citizen believes they have received poor service, we advise them to remain civil until the problem is resolved. Well, this all happened when Martinez called to complain about an order she had picked up. After calling to complain, Martinez returned to the restaurant and started a verbal altercation. Martinez said the soup she picked up was hot and the plastic lid placed on top of it had melted. She then proceeded to throw the soup at the victim and left before officers arrived. Martinez was reportedly banned from the restaurant. In other words,
no soup for you! Come back 1 year!
If she goes to jail, please, please, please make her work in the kitchen there. Yeah. In North Carolina, a Raleigh man was charged with insurance fraud after officials say he faked an image to show that there was a hair in his McDonald's burger. Officials accused 41-year-old Ronnie Bernard Truesdale of planting a hair on the burger after removing the wrapper. Truesdale also said the burger caused him to become nauseated. He filed an insurance claim with Zurich North America, an insurer for McDonald's, for pain and suffering, as well as $1,595 in medical expenses paid to WakeMed. Truesdale was also charged with felony attempting to obtain property by false pretense. 2 all beef patties, special sauce, lettuce, cheese, pickles, onions on a sesame seed bun. No hair. And finally, okay, remember this story the next time you have food delivered to you via an app. A DoorDash driver was caught on a security camera using the lobby of a Brentwood, California apartment building as a toilet while delivering food to a resident. Lisa Stanley, co-host of the K-Earth 101 morning show, shared a video showing the delivery driver approaching with a bag of food and dropping it off to a neighbor before defecating into a trash can. Said Stanley, "I checked that video and I literally threw up. I was so sick. There is no scenario in the world for what I saw happen. This is a health problem here because then you can be sure she was going to deliver other meals." According to Stanley, DoorDash also refunded the food order and provided a $20 credit to her account. Notice how there is no word on what, if anything, happened to the delivery person? Also, I don't know about where you live, but have you ever gone into any of your local fast food restaurants and you see the delivery app drivers waiting for orders that they're going to deliver? Isn't that the sketchiest bunch of folks you've ever laid eyes on? It's like the lineup scene in The Usual Suspects.
"Well, I believe in God, and the only thing that scares me is Kaiser Soze."
Exactly.
Get more from your neighborhood. DoorDash.
Oh, hell no. Not in my neighborhood. Anyway, let's get to our first guest here in this edition of the Stuff File program, shall we? I keep mentioning on this show who my favorite authors are, and at the top of that list is Peter James. He is the author of the Detective Superintendent Roy Gray series of thrillers, novels that take place in Brighton in the UK. Peter has sold over 21 million copies of his books worldwide, and his latest Roy Grace novel, the 17th in the series, is now out. It's called Left You Dead. Peter joins us once again via Skype from Jersey in the British Isles. Hi, Peter.
Hi, how are you? Good to be here.
Just tickety-boo. Thanks very much for being back on the program again. As I mentioned, you are my favorite. I keep telling people that all the time. And, you know, I got to admit, the only difficulty I have in talking about your books is the fact that you have created these novels where all the titles are similar.
I know. The Duchess of Cornwall, who's like a huge fan of mine, and you know, she's currently featuring me on her book club, she calls them the Dead books.
Right. So when I'm telling people which one I always say people should start with number one, but which ones are they going to really enjoy? I'm thinking, okay, which title is the one? Because they're all very similar. There's Dead Simple, Looking Good Dead, Not Dead Enough, Dead Man's Footsteps. I can go on and on and on. The titles are very similar. What made you do that, by the way?
Well, I have to say first, it is dead simple to remember the first one.
Yes, it is.
Do you know why I did it? Was in my earlier novels, before I created Roy Grace, I had a thing for one-word titles. So my first successful book was a supernatural thriller called Possession. And then within 6 months of that book coming out, A.S. Byatt's book Possession came out. And then I wrote Alchemist and Paul Coelho's Alchemist came out, Twilight. And I realized that, you know, unfortunately, there is no copyright in a title. So what I thought I'd do is try and come up with a title that if anybody else did use it, would clearly be a copy. So when I created Dead Simple, nobody else had ever written a novel called Dead Simple. And the book did kind of well. And I just, a title popped in my head, which was Looking Good Dead for the second one. So I suggested that to my publishers. And they said, hey, what a great idea. We could have maybe Dead in the title of all of them. And I know it has caused some confusion, but I would counter that by saying, of any author that you or anybody listening love, how many of their titles can we actually remember? You know, how many Alistair MacLean titles can we actually remember? How many Stephen King titles can we actually remember? So although it's a little bit of confusion, I don't think it's much worse than for any other author.
Mm. So the current one, as I mentioned, 17th, it's called Left You Dead. What is this one about?
Left You Dead is a story that was very kind of dear to my heart. For many years, I think with my dark mind, I've often sort of thought I've been driving somewhere with my wife and sometimes, you know, one of us will need to nip into a shop to get something. And I've often thought, what would I do if I stopped outside a store and Lara, my wife, rushed inside to get something simple like, say, a sack of cat litter and then never came out again? Like, how long would I sit in the car waiting? When I get out of the car and I walk in the store and she's not there, what would I then do? You know, would I think maybe she's gone home? So I go home when she's not at home. How long do I wait before I start calling around friends and family and then the police? And then, if she had genuinely vanished, how long would it be before the police started to suspect that I'd maybe murdered her? And that's the kind of starting point for Left You Dead.
So when you started working on this novel and your wife comes around saying, oh, Peter, what are you working on now and how did this inspiration come to you? What did you say and what was her reaction?
I told her and she loved it. Laura and I work kind of very closely on the book. So I know a lot of authors like to write in complete isolation, but actually I love feedback and I trust Laura. She's completely honest. She'll say if something you think I'm writing is crap, she'll say it. Or if she thinks the relationship's not working. So we're quite sort of like collegiate in that sense. And she really loved the idea of the book because I think I love to write something that my publishers have a word for and they call it the everyday sinister. I love to write stories that about subjects that could happen to any of us. You know, not some super fantastical kind of Bond-like landscape, but the kind of strange things that could just happen to ordinary couples.
Everyday sinister, I think that is the perfect description of what your novels have been all about. I never thought about it before, but you said that, but that is perfect.
Thank you. You know, I think that with crime writing, I think the kind of thrillers that have always touched me the most have been the ones where I thought, oh my God, there but for the grace of God, go I, that could have happened to me so easily. You know, I've been in that situation or near that situation.
One of the things that I really enjoy about your novels is that there is a perfect balance between the crime that is the major story in each novel and the personal lives of the main characters within your story, the police officers and Roy Grace himself. And why I say it's a perfect balance, there are some novels which you read and sometimes personal stuff seems to get in the way of a good story. But you keep a very fine balance that is just right. Is that something that you are consciously aware of when you're writing stories about the personal lives of the characters that we've all grown to love over the years?
That's really kind of you to say that, Peter. I think that one of the things is I think people forget is that police officers in particular are as the former chief of the Metropolitan Police once said, ordinary people doing extraordinary things. You know, we forget that a police officer goes to a horrible crime scene or maybe a horrible car wreck, sees dead bodies, has to deal with them, then goes home and has to bathe his three little kids and put them to bed. you know, that behind the horrors, they are normal human beings. I also try to portray normal life because I think how police and villains act is very much informed by what happens in their own personal lives too. What's motivating a villain? You know, is it that he needs money, or is it anger at his wife, or is it anger at something else? And how a police officer behaves and acts will depend to a very large extent on how the home life is going. You know, if they have if they're going through a traumatic divorce, they're going to be, if you like, defocused. It's human. So I've always tried to portray, because I'm fascinated in villains too and why people do what they do. In the Roy Grace novels, I've always tried to portray everything from three different perspectives. Firstly, from the perspective of the criminal. Secondly, from the perspective of the villain, and making sure that we know and see the victim, and we see the victim as a human being, and from the perspective of the police investigating.
When did you write this book? And the reason why I asked that question is, you know, we've all gone through this horrific pandemic, and I'm just wondering, were you writing this at that time? And if so, how did that in any way, shape, or form affect how you worked?
So, really good question. I decided to set Left You Dead in the immediate sort of months before the pandemic began. Big part of that reason is, I think, as you know, I'm a stickler for research. And in normal times, I go out with the police every week or every couple of weeks, because trying to keep myself up to date, I go out on patrol and response cars. And I couldn't do any of that in COVID. And also, I didn't know how, if police were arresting somebody, how that was all going to work. It all got very complicated with masks and isolation. And I thought the simplest thing was to set the novel before the pandemic began.
The one thing we talked about the last time you were on with us was that you were just about to embark on seeing your character, Detective Superintendent Roy Grace, depicted on television. You were only filming at that time, but now it's been released. So how's it been seeing Detective Grace on your TV screens?
It's been a magical experience. They've just filmed the next three in the series, which will be out in the spring and hopefully in Canada around that time too on BritBox. And I have to say I'm more than delighted. John Sim, who plays Roy Grace, is exactly how I imagined Roy looking when I first created him. And it's the same with Richie Campbell, who plays his kind of partner in crime, his sidekick, Glenn Branson. He is so much like the original Glenn Branson that I had created. And Glenn Branson was based on a real cop called Glenn Douglas in Sussex Police, who I'd met many years back and just was really taken with. And the whole team have been so good to work with. I've been consulted on every single changes in the script. I've had casting, I've been sort of consulted on every member of cast. It's been a really happy experience. And we had phenomenal ratings when the show opened in England, when Dead Simple opened in England. I think we had the fourth highest ratings of the year. So I could not be happy with how it's been done. And I did fight for years and years and years to make sure that it wasn't mauled and mangled on the screen. You know, it was a long time before I finally was happy enough to let it go into production.
I've never been to the UK, but I get a true sense of what Brighton must be like by reading your books. How has Brighton fared? How do the people of Brighton feel about the success of your novels? Because it's kind of putting them on a map.
They love it. I mean, the Brighton Tourist Board, Visit Brighton, a couple of years ago, put a copy of a Roy Grace novel in every hotel room in the city and in every taxi. But it is funny. I had an email from a Dutch fan a couple of years back, and she said, Dear Mr. James, I'm a very big fan of your Roy Grace novels, but my boyfriend and I want to come to Brighton, but we are a little bit nervous about the crime rate as we read it in your books. I wrote back and I said, don't you worry. I said, Detective Superintendent Roy Grace will watch your backs while you're over here. And I had a lovely email about 6 months later saying, well, my boyfriend, who's now my fiancé, and I came to Brighton, and we had a wonderful time, and nobody mugged us.
That's great. The current book is Left You Dead. Dare I ask, are you working on number 18 as we speak?
I am, Peter. Number 18 is actually finished, and I'm now editing it. It's going to be out. It'll actually be out a little later next year in September, and it's called "Picture You Dead," and it's about the about a couple who buy a painting in a car boot sale, and then they discover there's another painting underneath it that might be an incredibly rare, long lost Fragonard from 1770 and worth millions.
Wow.
And I've been sort of delving into the world, the really murky world of art forgery. I'd love to talk to you about that when the book comes out. It's I've learned so much.
We'd love to have you on when that one comes out. In the meantime, the current one is Left You Dead. It's out there now, the 17th Detective Superintendent Roy Grace novel. Peter, I thank you once again for being on the program with us.
Peter, it's always a joy to talk to you. You may be my number one book fan. I'm your number one radio show fan.
Thank you very much. Thanks for being on the program.
Thanks. Take care.
Peter James, author of the excellent Roy Grace thrillers. He really is my favorite thriller writer. The latest novel is called Left You Dead. You can go to my website at thestufffile.com to the page for this show, which is show number 0640, and you'll find links to Peter's site, plus links to either Amazon.com or Amazon.ca, where you can order his book directly. You're listening to The Stuff File Program with me, Peter Anthony Holder.
The Stuff File Program is a listener-supported, fan-funded radio show that depends on you for our success. Join us at patreon.com to help make this show an even bigger and better radio experience. Sign up and find out about our rewards program. Being a patron doesn't have to be a long-term commitment. There's absolutely no obligation. You could join today and end whenever you'd like. But the time we have your support would be so greatly appreciated. We'd also love to hear your thoughts about the show and even your ideas for rewards. Join us for the ride. Join us at patreon.com/thestufffileprogram. Here's a penny for your thoughts from the Stuff File Program coming to you from Montreal, Canada, a country that doesn't have pennies.
And still to come in the program, you'll meet the guy who has a tank for a taxi. Plus, Stuart Nallman is in with another edition of Book Banter. There's also an Idiot of the Day coming your way, and much more in Stuff File News, here on a program that's heard everywhere, including on Stitcher, TuneIn, iHeartRadio, Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music, and Spotify, just about everywhere where you stream podcasts. And you'll find buttons for Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, iHeartRadio, and Amazon Music right on the website at thestufffile.com. Check it out. Join. Listen in. Much appreciated if you do. Let's get back to the stuff. The Michigan Department of Licensing and Regulatory Affairs, or LARA as it's known, revoked a Garden City woman's daycare license after an investigation revealed a child put another child in a clothes dryer and turned it on while under her supervision, and she didn't tell the child's parents. According to LARA, the woman brought the child, described only as Minor Household Member 1, or MHM1, to the hospital on August the 4th, because she was stressed out, because MHM1 had put another child in the clothes dryer and turned it on. The child later admitted to a nurse and social worker that she did put another child in the dryer and turn it on. Later, the child who was in the dryer told her mother about it and said it was hot and it was dark and it hurt my back. According to the report, the woman never told the child's parents or LARA about the incident and then proceeded to lie about it during the investigation process. LARA's investigation found violations under the Child Care Organizations Act, and as of November the 3rd, the woman's license has been revoked. She is no longer allowed to operate a daycare and must inform all parents of children in her care about her license suspension. Well, one does have to ask, if her license has been revoked, then why are there still children in her care? Also, she took the kid who turned on the dryer to the hospital, but not the kid in the dryer. And how did she think that she was going to keep this a secret when children talk to their parents? But also, you can't take someone else's child to a hospital without somebody reporting it. Yeah. Anyway. The Stump File program has a lot of listeners here in Canada and also a lot of listeners in the United States. We are the best of neighbors, but we are different. For instance, we here at the Stump File program would like to wish our American friends the best of the Thanksgiving season. But you don't have to wish us the same thing because we had our Thanksgiving back in October. Also, please, Americans, stop asking me why I don't celebrate the 4th of July. Up here, we're 3 days ahead of you on that one. And I know there is some confusion in the U.S. about Remembrance Day, which is your Veterans Day, but we observe it like it's your Memorial Day. We can all agree on Christmas Day, however, but you Americans look at us funny because we storm the stores on the day after Christmas, on Boxing Day, something you've already done on Black Friday, the day after Thanksgiving. And one of the biggest differences between us, guns. Here's a story that explains that. A Florida woman is facing a slew of charges after allegedly attempting to drive into Canada with 56 guns in the trunk of her car. The Canada Border Services Agency said the 48-year-old woman was referred for secondary inspection at the Blue Water Bridge border crossing on November the 1st. That's the bridge that connects Port Huron, Michigan, and Sarnia, Ontario. Now, during the inspection, CBSA officers allegedly found 56 undeclared prohibited firearms, 13 overcapacity magazines, 43 10-round pistol magazines, and 100 rounds of ammunition. The items were located in boxes in the trunk of the woman's car. The CBSA said some of the guns had their serial numbers altered or removed. Vivian Richards of Oakland Park is facing a total of 9 charges under the Customs Act and the Criminal Code, including possession for the purpose of weapons trafficking. I'm sure while she was being arrested, someone said sorry to her. By the way, another difference between our countries? Football. The difference between the CFL and the NFL is we have bigger balls and end zones the size of Saskatchewan. Anyway, let's get to our next guest here in this edition of the Stuff File program, shall we? Merlin Batchelor is an enterprising Brit in Norwich, England, who purchased a used armored personnel carrier, refurbished it, and has now created a side business in his community called Tank Taxi. Merlin joins us on the line from Norwich. Hi, Merlin.
Hi, nice to meet you, Peter.
Nice to meet you, too. Thanks for being on the program with us. I saw the story of you driving around in your personal, in your armored personnel carrier. And how did this idea come in the first place? In other words, how did you decide that this is what you wanted to have?
I've always wanted a tank. I did my driving license for tanks about 15 years ago, just for fun. Never had a house with a big enough driveway to park one on till now. I got it really for family, for me and family to have fun. And it sort of went from there.
Okay, so let's back up a little further. What made you decide that you wanted to get a tank license? That's not something people come up with every day.
To be honest, I think it was, I went through a phase of collecting the driving licenses. You know, after you pass your car license and you think, oh, wow, I can drive now. That's cool. And then I went and did a motorbike one. I thought, oh, now I can drive motorbikes. I went and did a lorry one. I thought, I might as well collect all of these. And I realized there were some esoteric categories. And you can do a license to drive electric milk floats in the UK and things like that. So, license for steamrollers as well. That was an interesting one, driving a steamroller. So I did the tank one. I thought, this is pretty cool.
Okay, so you get the tank license. And then several years later, you decide, I'm going to get myself one. And it doesn't come cheap. You paid like $35,000 for this, if I'm not mistaken.
That's right, yes. It was about, $35,000, £25,000 thereabouts. It's buying them, actually, well, I suppose it's, you know, if you look at it, any sort of, well, second-hand or reasonably new car comes to about that sort of amount. So it's not that far off getting a car or van.
And where do you get a second-hand armored personnel carrier? Whose military do you get it from?
It's a British one. I bought it online. I actually bought it as a resale. So the MOD, they sell off their old equipment and things. lots of trade buyers purchase them, not just sort of militaries overseas, but also you get a lot of people who use them for shows and film shoots and things like that, and some just collectors. And I bought it off a collector, essentially.
Now, I mentioned you refurbished it, so I would assume that took a little bit of money as well. First of all, what kind of shape was it in when you bought it?
It was a rusting hulk. The person who sold it to me said it had sat in the field for 40 years. Engine didn't work. Nothing worked. Tracks didn't go round. It was pretty much just a big rusted lump of metal. So they sandblasted it down, got everything working. That, by the way, was included in the cost of buying it. So that $35,000, that covered the cost of buying and renovating it. But since then, we've been doing extra things to it. So, for example, we've added a reversing camera, very handy if you're reversing a large imposing vehicle. And we've also added a TV inside with a sound bar. We've got a compressor fridge that we're going to be installing soon, and LED strip lights. So, it's all good fun.
People really need to see this thing, and people can, by the way, go to your website at tanktaxi.co.uk to check it out and see you actually on the roads, which brings me to another point. I was actually very surprised when I was watching the video. First of all, did you have to get some sort of classification from the city of Norwich? Because I would assume that something that has not wheels, but tracks like a tank could do some serious damage to roadways.
It's comparatively light for tanks, so it's 15 tons. And of course, you can drive excavators and things that have and tractors and things that do have tracks on the road. So you don't need any special permissions for driving a tracked vehicle. The main thing is to make sure that with tanks, because they have steel tracks, what you have is rubber pads fixed in between each one. So essentially, it's just rubber making contact with the road rather than steel. It does no damage to the road at all.
Okay, so between the time where you bought it and refurbished it and took it out for spins, when did the idea come to you that, wait a minute, I'm not just something that I can do joyrides with my family and friends with, but I can actually make a few dollars on this?
Yeah, so that sort of came about. Well, I bought it originally for myself and family, but then I had neighbours and friends asking for rides, and then friends of friends, and then people I didn't even know, the postman, for example, or the mailman, as you call him over there, said, "Oh, can you take my kids to the prom? How much would it cost?" I thought, "I don't know. I'll have to go and find out." And so I went and found out.
Where did you find out? Are there other kinds? I have since gone online and seen people in other countries who are doing this, but did you find other people who do this kind of thing?
There is one other company I know of in the UK that does do it. The first thing I did was call the insurer and just said, can I increase the insurance to do private hire work? How much would that cost? And the insurer said, "Oh, yeah, you can do this and it will cost that amount." And I sort of set up the website and thought, "Oh, that's great, that's nice and easy." And then the council very helpfully contacted me saying, "Oh, you need a private hire operator's license to do this sort of thing." So we went down the route of approaching the council to get a private hire operator's license. But even without the license, you're permitted in the UK to use it for weddings and funerals. They're exempt from the private hire licensing scheme, I think just for historic reasons.
Okay. So again, it's an armored personnel carrier, even though we are calling it a tank. When people think of tanks, they think of, somebody in the turret, a couple of people inside. But this is an armored personnel carrier. Just the name says it carries personnel. So how many people can fit into it?
We've got 8 seats installed, so it can comfortably seat 8 plus the driver.
And you mentioned proms. What other things are people renting it out for? I would assume weddings too.
Yes, we've done weddings in it. So as I mentioned, we can do weddings and funerals without any additional licensing. In order to do proms and things, we'd need to get that extra license from the council, which the council were very nice. And they said, get some seatbelts installed, do other things, and then you come back to us and make another application. And hopefully we'll grant it next time. But weddings and funerals is the current thing we do.
Are you surprised by the success that you're having, not only both locally, but I'm sure you're getting interest from people around the world? I mean, I'm calling you here from Canada. I saw your story on CBS News in the United States. The attention you're getting from this, does it surprise you?
It's quite fascinating. I mean, I do find it really amusing that I've had, you know, CBS News and Fox News in America do stories, as well as places over here, and of course yourself from Canada. So I'm glad that it's providing entertainment. That's really what it's for.
And is business going well?
Yeah, so business is going well. I mean, we're doing a few weddings and things. I mean, I got it for myself and family. So, you know, doing the extra little bit, getting a few weddings in it and getting a bit of money back from it, because obviously there's a bit of an outlay to purchase it. Anything is helpful.
Is there even a possibility that this is something that can become a full-time thing? Like, what is your day job?
I work as a lawyer.
You work as a lawyer. Okay. So is there ever a possibility that you could say to yourself, you know, this could be not necessarily my full-time gig, but if I hang on to this, this could be my retirement. I could buy another personnel carrier or maybe even two and have a fleet. Do these ideas ever come into your mind?
Because I've got the license to drive it, so it's just me driving it. Fleet wouldn't really be suitable for me. It's just me. But I haven't really looked at it as work. It's a bit like I used to be a swimming teacher, and I got into that through being a swimmer. You know, something, a fun hobby that turned into a little bit of work on the side, which is sort of with this. You know, if you're enjoying it, then it doesn't really feel like a job at all.
And when you first brought that armored personnel carrier home, what did the neighbors initially think? Was it a situation of, what the heck is Merlin doing? Or is it a situation where they know you and they say, well, that's Merlin?
One neighbor loves it, one neighbor doesn't.
Well,
like Marmite, you know, you either love it or you hate it, as they say.
Well, it certainly is a fascinating situation. And again, I encourage people to go to your website and take a look at it, tanktaxi.co.uk. It's a most interesting story. And it sounds like you're having a lot of fun with it, Merlin. And that's all you can really ask for in life, I think. So congratulations on this little hobby that has turned into a side business for you. And thank you very much for taking the time to talk with us.
Thank you. Take care. Bye-bye.
Merlin Batchelor, the owner of a refurbished armored personnel carrier that is his side business called Tank Taxi. You can go to my website at thestufffile.com, check out the show number for this program, which is show number 0640, and you'll find the link to Merlin's site. You're listening to The Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder.
Got something for the mailbag? Drop Peter a line. He'd love to hear from you. Send your email to mailbag@thestufffile.com. And remember, stuff is spelled S-T-U-P-H. That's mailbag@thestufffile.com. Or catch up with him on Twitter or Facebook. There's more Stuff File coming your way in just a few moments.
Peter Anthony Holder here. Often I mention my book, Great Conversations, my interviews with two men on the moon and a galaxy of stars. I also often mention that I'd like you to become a patron of the Stuff File program via Patreon.com. Well, this is my opportunity to combine both of those pleas to you. You've heard me say on many occasions about the myriad of celebrities I've had the chance to talk to that are contained in my book, which is published by Bear Manor Media. You've also heard me mention that some of the celebrities in my book, and many others, can be heard on our page at patreon.com. Well, if you've been on the fence about joining Patreon, let me try to pull you over to our side. By becoming a patron, you help to make this show an even bigger and better radio experience. And if you do become a regular patron, as a Patreon reward, I'll share with you an electronic version of my book for your e-reader. So join Patreon and claim your copy of Great Conversations, my interviews with two men on the moon and a galaxy of stars. Sign up today at patreon.com/thestufffileprogram.
From our studios in Montreal, Canada, and going out to the rest of the world, this is the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. It's time to crack a spine. The Stuff File presents Book Banter with Stuart Nauman. Once again, here's Peter Anthony Holder.
And yes, the fab Stuart Nauman is with us once again. And don't even think of trying the accent. I warn you right now. Hello, Stu.
Okay. Hi, Peter. I just want to thank everyone on behalf of the band and ourselves, and I hope you just passed the audition.
Okay. I know that was difficult for you to do, or not do.
I figured I don't want to get another dressing down from you, my attempts of doing a Liverpudlian accent, At least I quoted. I quoted a famous quote, a Beatle quote.
Yes, yes. And we are indeed talking about the Fab Four.
Oh, of course. And on this edition of Book Banter, there's every reason to do so. Because although it's been over 50 years since the Beatles broke up, every time something that's never seen or heard before by the Fab Four is unearthed or is re-released, it becomes an event. Let's face it. It does become an event. Best example was what happened in 1995. When the Beatles anthology was released, first as a TV special on ABC, I watched it when it aired. Then they released the entire anthology on VHS and DVD. Then there was a three-part double CD set and a companion book dealing with the Beatles anthology, which was like their autobiography, sort of, like an oral autobiography. It was a big event. I do remember that. But now the newest Beatles unearthed gem deals with an aborted project that resulted in the Beatles' final two albums that they released during their time as a group. You see, in January 1969, the group had the idea of recording a new album, which they was tentatively titled Get Back, film it as a documentary in the Twickenham Film Studios in London, and then perform climax, as the finale, this grand finale that they would perform live, the very first live concert since 1966 in San Francisco. Now, by the end of the month, the project was shelved due to growing rifts between, John, Paul, George, and Ringo, particularly Paul and George. Now, the tapes, the audio tapes of the songs that they, most of the songs they did, both at Twickenham and Apple, became Let It Be, their final released album as a group, and became an Oscar. And some of the footage that was done, the film footage, became the Oscar-winning documentary Let It Be. Now, but what happened to all the 55 hours of footage that was shot during that time at Twickenham Studios and at Apple Studios in that fateful month of January 1969? Well, Oscar-winning director Peter Jackson did something about it. And through his tireless efforts, resulted in an upcoming three-part documentary series called The Beatles Get Back, which is airing on the Disney Plus streaming service, which I hope to get very soon. But like the anthology, Get Back spawned a beautiful companion book, and which is available right now, and it's quite the eye-catching book. It is one of my favorite books right now this year. The text mainly are transcripts from the recording sessions that were done at Twickenham Studios and at Apple Studios while they were making the documentary and the album. And the talk is quite Beatles in nature. It's the type of dialogue that you expect from the Beatles, which was very well exemplified in Hard Day's Night. And many of the conversations between the songs, the song recordings, they act like sort of like a confessional and gives the reader the idea of the tension that grew between them, during this very crucial part of the what would be the end of the Beatles. One example that really sticks out for me is when Paul and George were arguing in between the songs over doing a live concert one more time. Paul was all for it. George was dead set against it. And of course, the book gets a little help from their friends, thanks to the photos by Ethan Russell and the late Linda McCartney, which capture the fun, the hard work that the Beatles put into making this record that was hoped to be mark the Beatles' mega project, so to speak. And one of my favorite photos in the book, it happens during the Twickenham portion of the project, where Mal Evans, one of the Beatles' longtime roadies, he's sitting on a chair with a stopwatch in one hand, a hammer in another, and a fire bell in front of him, waiting to do the the ringing of the bell, like bang bang, from Maxwell Silver Hammer.
Right.
So trying to get it, you know, he was doing all the bell banging, all the bell ringing for that. So it's a good little behind the scenes photo there. Now, I thought the book was a definitive fly in the wall look of a legendary rock group, basically who were vainly trying to stay afloat when they faced the inevitable. That was the Beatles breakup, which happened in April of 1970. And you know what? If you're, I have a friend who's a Beatles fan or a family member who's a Beatles fan, believe me, this book is going to make a great Christmas gift.
Mm. You mentioned that you're planning on getting Disney Plus. I will not be getting Disney Plus. I do not see the need to continue to subsidize Walt's ongoing freezer budget.
Yeah, the formaldehyde and the dry ice, you know, the costs do add up.
Yeah. It's interesting how it seems to be that everything that the Beatles ever touched or laid somewhere in their attic or their basement seems to be worth a lot and is being dredged up by all parties involved. Meanwhile, no one cares what's in Pete Best's basement.
Yeah. And you know what? Funny you should mention Pete Best's basement, because it was in the basement of the Best home in Liverpool where his mom, Mona Best, did, you know, ran a club there that the Beatles performed at and became one of the top hangouts in Liverpool. So, yeah, I think maybe someone should take a little bit look further into the into Pete Best's basement, because there's a bit of Beatles history in there.
Yes, indeed. So this book is?
It's called The Beatles Get Back by, of course, The Beatles. And it's published by Callaway Arts and Entertainment in association with Apple. And it's a princely, but so well worth it, $80.
And dare I ask, what should you recommend in a similar vein? I'm assuming it's going to be another picture tome of some sort?
Well, yeah, I do recommend the Beatles companion book to the TV series. That's a keepsake. Also, if you want to, I also recommend the Beatles biography by Hunter Davies. It was the first authoritative biography of the Beatles, and it was published in 1968, a few months before this project, the Get Back project, happened. And it's still available. I mean, it's you can still get that book. But I also must add, for Beatles fans right now, there is a book that is going to be a must-have on your Beatles shelf. It's called Paul McCartney, The Lyrics. It's a beautiful two-volume set. Basically, Paul McCartney tells the story behind every song he's ever written between 1956 and the present. And it's the closest thing that Beatles fans will have to a memoir by Paul McCartney.
Excellent. So again, this week's book once again is
called The Beatles Get Back by The Beatles, published by Callaway Arts Entertainment and Apple, and it's $80.
And by the way, we're not that far away from our holiday package for this show, for Book Banter. Would it be fair to say that this book would show up in that roundup again of coffee table books?
Probably, yeah. And hopefully if I get, I requested the Paul McCartney book way back in January.
Wow.
And I reminded them again a few weeks ago. So if I get that in time, yes, that book will be on the list too.
Well, it's probably on get back order. How can people find you, sir?
Well, they won't find me on the rooftop of Apple, of the Apple Studios on January 30th, 1969, to watch the rooftop concert. You can find me in the pages of the Montreal Times every week, printed, digital, or online at www.mtltimes.ca.
Thank you very much, Stu.
And remember, get back, Loretta. Your mommy's waiting for you with her high heel shoes and her low neck sweater. Get back, you rebel.
Okay. Stuart Nullman with another edition of Book Banter here on the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder.
The Stuff File.
And we're just about a racetrack for this edition of the Stuff File program. We do have an idiot of the day coming your way, but I got a few more Stuff File news stories to share with you here on the Stuff File program, which is also heard on Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio. A Milton, Florida man has been arrested after a fight that allegedly started when the man was caught humping his boyfriend's dog. 33-year-old John Miller is charged with domestic violence battery, domestic violence aggravated assault, and criminal mischief. Miller was caught humping the dog, and when his boyfriend confronted him, he said Miller attacked him, punching him in the head and upper body, leaving red marks and cuts. The victim said Miller destroyed items in the house and the garage door. He said Miller also grabbed a knife, threatening to kill him, leaving him in fear of his and his mother's life. Miller is in a Santa Rosa County jail with a $7,000 bond. You know what disturbs me about this story, besides the initial act with the dog? The fact that during the alleged attack by Miller, the boyfriend's dog doesn't seem to be coming to his master's defense. Whose side is this pooch on anyway? Lee County, Florida sheriff's deputies were chasing a stolen vehicle when it drove onto the Edison Bridge, which crosses the Caloosahatchee River. As a sheriff's helicopter watched from above, the minivan skidded into a retaining wall. The driver jumped out and jumped over the edge. The bridge is about 55 feet above the water. The driver, identified as 34-year-old Brian K. Gray, was rescued, hospitalized, and charged with grand theft auto and fleeing and eluding deputies. The minivan's owner, Marcella Chacon, says Gray is her nephew, and she was the only family member to help him when he got out of prison a year before. A witness to the jump called the escape attempt reckless. The witness, John Shearer, said, "You can't teach dumb or stupid their natural-born abilities." Well, I guess that aunt won't have to worry about helping her wayward nephew out for at least a few more years. You know, I've seen his dive off the bridge. It wasn't pretty. Judges won't be giving him any high marks. It wasn't quite a belly flop. It wasn't quite a half gainer. Heck, it wasn't even a Janet gainer. It was just kind of sad, really. You can check it out for yourself. I've posted it on the Stuff File fan page on Facebook for you to see in all of its glory. Check it out. Would you like to know the true definition of awkward? How about this? An Arizona woman who was the birthing partner for her best friend discovered, to her horror, that her own husband was the father. After she noticed a rare hereditary birthmark on the girl's neck that was identical to the cheating man's. 28-year-old Haley Custer, a woman of four from Wickenburg, was left heartbroken after finding out that her husband, 36-year-old Travis Bowling, cheated on her with her bestie. Custer claimed her now ex-hubby cheated with at least 30 women during their 6 years of marriage, during which he had two kids with two other people. Said Custer, "I heard rumors that my friend was pregnant and homeless, so I reached out to her. I felt the need to help her. We had just got home from the hospital, and I was changing the baby, and when she turned her neck, the birth defect popped out. When they're babies, it's really hard to see, and I wasn't looking for it." Describing the shock that came over her, she continued, "When I found out my friend was standing next to me, I looked at her and you could just tell. She couldn't say anything. She just dropped her head and looked to the floor, and I just knew." You know what's amazing about this story? The fact that Custer said that after the initial shock wore off, she forgave her pal and decided to continue their friendship and to have a cordial relationship with her ex for the sake of the kids. Wow. Travis Bowling is a very lucky man. Normally, you'd think there are at least 30 women who might just want to kill him in his sleep. And if any of them are married, their husbands would probably want to kill him too. But only after they hook up some of his body parts to jumper cables. Anyway, boys and girls, it's the moment you've all been waiting for. It's time now for The Idiot of the Day.
And now it's time for the strange things adults do. This Stuff File presents The Idiot of the Day.
This one actually goes back to September. Two young nitwits committed a series of drive-by slushy attacks that they recorded with a GoPro camera for uploading to YouTube. Police say 19-year-old Rafael Mercado and 19-year-old Keziah McKay targeted victims in Pinellas Park, a city in the Tampa Bay area. As alleged in the criminal complaint, Tweedledum and Tweedledumber purchased 7 slushies from a Circle K store and then proceeded to throw the frozen drinks at multiple persons for the purpose of their YouTube video content. The slushies were launched at pedestrians by McKay, who was a passenger in a vehicle driven by Mercado, who filmed the misdemeanor action with McKay's GoPro camera. After Mercado was collared by a Florida Highway Patrol trooper, he reportedly confessed and said that he had done similar slushy attacks a week earlier, also for the purpose of the YouTube content. McKay copped to the slushy batteries and referred to the possibility of monetary gains as a result of the views tallied on YouTube. Now, why? Oh, why would you think that you could get away with a slushy assault on strangers when your intent was to put it up on YouTube in the hopes that it would go viral, never thinking that said viral video would definitely lead to your capture? One reason, and one reason only, you're idiots!
Gee, I'm only a kid, but even I know you're an idiot.
And that's it for this edition of the Stuff File program, number 0640. Hope you enjoyed it. The website is thestufffile.com, and once again, stuff is spelled S-T-U-P-H, where you'll find information and links and all of our guests by going to the weekly Stuff File page. Just look for the corresponding program number, and once again, that's 0640. Email me at peter@thestufffile.com. You can also find me on Facebook and Twitter as PA Holder, and don't forget to check us out on patreon.com, where you can become a patron of the program. Hope to see you back here for our next show on the air, online, or as a download. We're coming to you from everywhere, including CyberStationUSA.com, KDXRadio.com, PCJ Radio International and its partner stations, TrueTalkRadio.com, streaming on Apple or Google Podcasts, Amazon Music, Spotify, Stitcher, and iHeartRadio, and over the air on World FM in New Zealand, MediaCorp in Singapore, CKUW-FM in Winnipeg, and CFMU in Hamilton. That's it. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder, a presentation of Flying Fish Communications. We leave you with this deep environmental thought. If we don't do something about global warming soon, eventually there won't be any ice floes left to put our elders on.